Welcome to the Lean Commerce Podcast, the show that sheds light on hidden levers that can help you 10x your business. Join us as we talk to experts and find out the 1% improvements that you can apply right now to take you there.
Hey, everybody. Today we are here with Sully. He's the owner at Bomb Tech Golf and Ecom Grower. Sully, thanks for coming on.
Glad to be here.
So, Sully, you've got a couple sporting passions, but it seems like you also have a couple e-commerce expertise things. You're one of the few agency owners and store owners I've met that is pretty successful in both areas. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got your start in e-commerce and what you do today?
Sure, yeah. So kind of my journey was accidental passion that turned business. So, you know, I'm like a dinosaur for e-commerce. But this was 2011-12 is when I started to explore selling online. And I was attempting to be the world's longest driver in golf. And all that means, it's like the home run derby of golf. And I was like the worst one at it, but I really loved it. And every day I would just go to the driving range and hit golf balls as hard as I could. And now my back is like messed up, and now we've sold a ton of golf clubs, and it all came from my insane passion. And so I started, I had a club builder in town building me all these like unique custom drivers that I would source different components from small brands. And one day I was at a competition. I broke every driver I had, and not from pure power. I wish it was. But the local club builder, he's just assembling the clubs. He assembled them in a way that they were not holding up. And I just said, all right, I'm going to learn to assemble my own clubs. I started assembling them. And then I launched the world's worst website, specifically making these niche golf drivers for long drive. I'll never forget the day. I was slow to learn. And I think it was 6 months in, crazy to a lot of people, but this was like before Facebook ads even were like a big thing, and video and even the selfie. I got my first sale, and I was actually on my boat, and it wasn't a yacht, but it blew my mind that I was able to sell something while I was physically on a boat. And that was like my aha moment of like, I need to do more of this. And so fast forward, I was always in sales. I was selling copiers, medical device, pharmaceutical sales, you name it. And then I was like, you know what? Every year of pharmaceutical sales, they do like a layoff or threaten a layoff. I was like, I'm going to get a job that's really secure from a local Vermont company. So I took this job about an hour away, hour commute, as a sales manager for a tech engineering firm. And I was killing it. We doubled our sales there. It was the week before Thanksgiving. I just found out my wife was pregnant. And my boss comes to me and goes, you know what? You need to come down to HR with me. I'm like, okay. And he's like, today's your last day and your last paycheck's last week. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to get some water so I don't knock you out. So I like cooled off. I got some water. I said, you can physically try to remove me. Imagine the emotions. You know, my wife just found out she's pregnant. The week before Thanksgiving, this was a job supposed to be secure. Bomb Tech was a side hustle. It was doing like 15, 20 K a month. And I'm getting fired up just thinking about it. And he's like, I go, well, you can try to physically remove me and repay me all my commission and 1 month severance. So they ended up paying me. And I came home, and it was the first time I've ever been home before my wife. And she's like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I got fired. She's like, this was so supportive. We got a kid on the way. And she's like, are you going to just make this Bomb Tech thing work or what? And that was a kick in the butt I needed to figure it out. So I went from, I think it was like 100K that year, getting fired to doing like, it wasn't crazy growth, but 480K. And then the next year with Facebook video, I got it to 1.2 million. And I was just by myself, no employees. We're from 1.2 to 4.5 and then to 6.3. And then that's kind of where we're at now. It's been a crazy dream. And then that was my e-commerce journey. And then we had a couple case studies, not to ramble on, but we had a number of case studies come out on the brand. And I've always tried to help other e-commerce brands out, and I never really knew, like, what was a measurable thing we could do that have major impact quickly. Because I've hired and fired more experts, gurus, and agencies than anyone. I guarantee it. And I'm always disappointed, right? So it's only been like 6 months. We've got 10 clients on the agency side, and we're really unique. We don't do ads. We only do one thing. And we essentially drive more revenue without spending more ads. And how we do that is we run your marketing, your email through Klaviyo better than anyone. And the only reason I decided to go down that path was I really wanted to help other e-com brands that sell direct consumer. I've been through the journey and I've been hired and fired all those companies that could not perform. And this is one offer I knew we can go into any account, we do an audit, and we can add real value, real revenue, and had impact on my own business. And that's why we do it. It wasn't like, I don't necessarily, I'm very fortunate. It's not like I need the revenue from the agency. I just felt like this was such a value and true lever that we could help other brands with. It's really exciting. So that's e-com growers.
That's fascinating. So let's dive a little bit into that notion of adding more revenue without increasing any ad spend, or because I think we've all worked with a lot of different agencies. You know, I run an agency as well. I think there are two kinds of maybe experiments that an agency will run, right? There's the guaranteed to work and, you know, has a pretty consistent payoff. And then there's the kind of let's swing for the fences, but there's a good chance it won't work. So high expected value, but low expectancy, like a new ad campaign. Nobody can guarantee a new ad campaign, right? Like it may or may not work out with the CPAs and the AOVs you need versus something like email. You've already got the customers and it's just using that list more effectively. So how do you do it? What's some of the strategy behind maximizing the revenue through Klaviyo?
Yeah, so we run, you know, obviously Facebook ads. That's what I do on my own e-com brand and the agency. But ads are so fickle and so up and down. I wanted to really add like real revenue. And for me, it's like, all right, ads are always going to be what they are. We could scale them up, but how can we get more from our current list and allow us to scale up and profit more? And even pay more if we wanted to on our CPA. What happened? This is kind of crazy. Like this is last year when ad costs for us started to go up. And my employee, who's now my partner, my first employee at BombTech, so he's like 6 years in now, is now my partner at the email agency. And we don't even like to talk email because it's like, that's how we do it. But email isn't sexy. So no one's like, I need an email guy. I need an email expert. No one will ever say that ever in the world. At any time, everyone, you know, is like, I need Facebook ads. I need Facebook ads. So that is one of our challenges is like, how do we convey that? And so that's why we say more revenue without spending more on ads. So that's what it is at the end of the day. But so Klaviyo did a case study on our brand last year because of the percent of revenue we were driving from email was like 10 or something. They had like never seen that at that time. And I was like, well, okay, that's pretty good. But like, what are other people doing in the industry? So when we started to work with clients and bring them on, we started like, I couldn't figure out how we could really do this, but Chris did. And he's the email expert, right? And he just started to do audits for free. So it's like it's a deep dive audit. He'll go through your entire account and just show you exactly where you're doing well. And it's really amazing to see now that we've had access to different clients. And some of them are crushing it, have amazing brands, and they're killing it. And they may be only doing like 10% of revenue from email, 15%. I think some of the highest we've seen is like 20%. I mean, some guys are crushing it certain months where they're not spending as much and maybe 30%. But we go in, build out all of our automation. So we've got a proven automation system with copy that we will then put on brand for you and then do monthly management of actual email. And Chris has, you know, techniques, you know, strategies with sending to certain and, you know, certain engagement tier. There's a whole process to it, but it's really exciting because you go and see an account that's doing 10% of revenue from email and bring them up to like 50%. And it blows their mind. But now it's almost like any account we bring on, we can just do it because we've got it, right? And that's why it's so exciting for us, because it's a real, you're literally uncovering, you know, 6 or 7 figures depending on the store, and you're not doing anything new.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I think that found revenue is the best revenue. And so Can you dive in a little bit into what you guys are looking at in terms of the processes? I think that'd be really helpful to hear, like, hey, we know that if you want to maximize 90-day email, here are the 5 sequences you got to use, or some, you know, that's just awesome stuff.
Yeah, I think, well, there's some, like, there's like 3 things I should talk about that are like so simple it blows your mind, but it's like, it has like huge impact. So first off, most people in terms of sending emails, they just get too fancy with it. And I think this is just as an e-commerce owner, business owner, you want to put your best foot forward and put in maximum effort with everything you do, right? And with email, it's no different. So we see a lot of accounts we look at, they're like HTML emails. They've got 50 images and they're beautiful images. And they write this, you know, newsletter that's got 15 different calls to action. And it's like, you know, it's like 2 pages long in terms of length. And we're like, whoa, I know you're putting a ton of effort into it, but it's not, you don't have to do that. So like the first thing we recommend, whether or not you work with us in any capacity, as plain text email. Probably 99% of listeners, myself included, you want to make them as fancy and, you know, as on brand as you can. Just going from like image-based HTML to plain text will get you more opens, will get you more conversions, and will get you more clicks. It's simple in concept, but people just aren't doing it. So that's number one. Number two, it's like email as a concept and channel, I just see everyone just pushing their message, right? And I'm all about making life easier and having the biggest way to do that with email is to have a conversation. So our second email, our welcome series, you can do this in any automation flow, is a question email where we literally just ask someone a question. So for us, it's like, all right, you're a golfer. Like it's one line, right? And this is the simplicity is the underlying thing with this whole thing. We've got a system, but it's the simplicity. We want to have a conversation. So our second email is a question email. What do you think the subject line is in that email? Question, question mark. That's it. Open rates on the email is like 65%. And then in the actual email, we say, what golf driver do you play now? So what happens is we get like, it's an insane reply rate. So now our emails are going from the promotions tab on Google or Gmail, and now we're going to the inbox because people are replying, right? And not only that, like that's a tactic or strategy, but we really take the conversation approach to all the email. So we have, you know, launch emails send where we're like, hey, we're launching this new, let's say, for example, we work with a lot of apparel and fashion brands. And it's like, all right, we got 2 new shirts coming out. Instead of me assuming as the business owner, because every time I've assumed I know what the customer wants, I'm wrong. Like I could probably tell you what the customer doesn't want. And I'm just joking. But literally, we would take the emails as an opportunity, especially if you have quick production times or you have the ability to do anything like that, like where you make it in-house. You did this with even with drivers and stuff. Color, just ask your audience, like, what do you guys want? You want A or B? That's a chance to use image in a proper way. Make an image side by side, say, do you guys like A or B? And then the customer feels like they're a part of the brand, a part of the journey. And then you just loop that into every email. So like, all right, you guys voted for A. Thank you so much. What do you think about this? Do you want early access to this? So it's just, it's a whole different approach to like pushing versus pulling or having a conversation that allows us to have these crazy open rates, insane engagement. And then people are pumped up waiting for that email. And when you ask them for like an order or for a new product, they're going to buy because they're pumped up.
That makes total sense. So you mentioned 3 of them. Now I'm dying to know what's number 3.
Oh God. What's the 3rd one? I think that's just part of it is the question one. And then, so like product launches, Cardhook just did a case study on my brand, which was pretty cool. That's how we did 100K in a day, right? And it really comes down to like, I see a lot of people failing on these product launches. And like for me, this is our biggest asset, right? And launching to the list is, it's almost free money, right? Because you don't have to pay to do that. And the day we did like 102,000 in sales, we only spent 5 grand on ads. And Facebook actually capped me that day. I thought we could have done more. But email was the driver. And what we did was we really allowed people to reply to get exclusive early access. So we're like, hey, just reply, boom, if you want these five key benefits, right? And I would say the third takeaway is you have to have, I think, timed scarcity. So what we did in like a product launch sequence, and there's a million ways we could go with the conversation, but I want to go the ones that have the biggest impact, is get the conversation going with questions to give like an early access. Have a you get that early access email, but with a real scarcity of like, okay, this ends at Tuesday at noon. And then that gives you the opportunity to slam people with emails until that deadline. And it's the Kickstarter effect. So if you've ever, we've done Kickstarter before. I don't know if you have any experience with that. But with Kickstarter, you always do well on your first couple of days and your last couple of days, right? And it's the same thing with email. So a lot of people, when they do a product launch, it's like, it's Friday at noon, no one knows it's coming. And then it's like, boom, new product, one email, it's over. And it's like a temporary spike. Where how we do it, we have, you know, all this prep, people getting involved, getting engaged. The actual launch, we have your first wave, you have your follow-ups based on opens and engagement. And then you've got your deadline where it's like last chance, all that stuff. If you just do those couple things, I mean, you're going to 2-3x your revenue. And that's like the Kickstarter. You actually have a deadline. So it's, and all of it is done in a conversational way. So they feel like they're a part of that process.
That makes total sense. And we had one of our early guests who was does consulting for crowdsourcing platforms and crowdfunding platforms. It is just crazy to hear how critical that initial momentum is and how critical that deadline is. Just like you're saying, you know, people really put it, and I would put myself in that camp. I put it off forever until I actually have to buy.
Everyone does. You know what I mean? So just taking that concept. And again, email and business and selling online is, it's simple, but it's hard. And I think the hardest part, it's just everyone, myself included, as an e-commerce store owner, gets shiny ball syndrome of like the latest and greatest stuff. And that's what took me, I think, so long to really figure out. It's like, all right, well, what actually drives the needle? We need traffic. You need email. Like if you dial in just those two things, 80% of your revenue or 90%. But most people are like, well, I do Facebook or do traffic and then email, but then they do Messenger, Reddit. They like do nine million things and 90% of them do nothing. I'd rather spend all my effort on the big levers. And that's why I run e-commerce brand with one employee. And that does, you know, mid seven figures with one guy. I talk to a lot of these e-com brands. So they got 15, 20 employees. And they're doing less than us. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, what are they actually doing? So like, I like, and everything I do in life and business, it's like, it's time and then cash in bank. I want time and I want money in bank. Revenue means nothing to me. So like, run lean and do stuff that actually impacts the business.
Wow. Yeah. That's a really big context. One of the other guests we had on, I think has two employees now and it has a similar run rate. Just super impressive. I have a B2B agency in one of my portfolio companies. There's like eight people and, $1.5 million in revenue. And then I hear about these guys doing, $5 to $10 million with two people. And I just go, oh, what impressive efficiency.
It's definitely a different model. And like with our agency work, we're taking the same, lean approach with standard operating procedures. And we go through everything we do and we have, it's an automation, delegation or removal or deletion meeting where we go, can we remove this task we're doing all together? Can we delegate it? And that system allows us to really get rid of any excess stuff that makes us feel busy that doesn't move the needle. And that took me a long time to embrace that because, even last year I had an office, had four employees or five employees, and I was, in my opinion, to now, I was bloated in terms of, and for my own sanity, running super lean and profiting more so your good days are really freaking good. And your slow days aren't bad. You know what I mean? So it's just, that's just how I want to operate, you know, maximum profit and low stress and a lot of overhead employees for me. It doesn't make sense. I'd be curious to see if there's any brands out there doing like 50 million, 100 million, what the other employees do, really.
Yeah, I knew that with one of the companies I partnered with, where we grew pretty quick, and most of the employees that we added were actually customer service, where I think maybe there was like four core employees, and it was probably like a $15 million a year run rate. And so it was four, maybe five people that drove the business in a big way, and then like 20 people that provided customer support.
And that's where I think you should invest, is in the customer experience. One thing not email related that you guys, if you do this, could be a quick win for you, is our customers are everything for us on both agency and e-commerce. And I send out, we used to do handwritten notes for every single customer, and we couldn't really scale that. So now we do thank you voicemails, where anyone that buys a product gets a voicemail from me that says, you know, oh my God, thank you so much for ordering. You know, welcome to the team and the family. You know, if there's anything to do, let me help, you know, sell it, whatever. It's simple, but it's just putting the extra effort into anything post-purchase too. And voicemails are scalable, and customers freak out about it. And they post in our groups like, oh my God, I got a voicemail from Sully thanking me for your order. And just putting the effort post-purchase when you're selling something is going to allow not only for you to, you know, you could sell more to existing customers, and when you've got a product launch, yeah, you're going to go, you can go huge. And then therefore your ads and email, everything works better if you've got a core customer base that loves you. But you got to put in the effort and do, again, that would be something you could get distracted with in terms of time and effort. Well, I'll call every employee, or I had someone handwriting notes, but a voicemail drop is easy. Can be done with Zapier. We do it manually because we didn't do the automation delegation meeting yet. quick hack or thing we do post purchase.
Yeah, I actually done a test purchase on your site just to go through and got the voicemail drop. I was like, wow, they're really on.
Did you? Oh, nice.
Yeah, I got the voicemail drop. It was a nice little setup too. I think it sounds, you know, because it doesn't sound like a robocaller or something. It's very clear that it's you speaking.
Oh yeah, it's a great little. I hate hacks and tricks, but it's a post-purchase hack. Yeah.
Definitely. Now, you know, at the beginning of the conversation, you mentioned that you've hired quite a few agencies, fired probably even more agencies than the average bear. But if you were in, you know, let's think back to those $1.2 million a year days, you know, year three, then how would you suggest that, you know, a store owner in that area look for a good agency? Because I think that there's, you know, we'll just again use Facebook ads as an example. Ton of agencies that do Facebook ads, very hard to vet, and they might have had success in one area and be very proficient, but like, you know, your offer just doesn't have the metrics that they're going to be able to scale in a good way, and they won't know until they spend the money. So if you were in that kind of smaller situation, limited resources, how would you suggest, you know, those store owners find a good agency to allocate it with?
I've given away all my tricks today. But so, yeah, this last year in particular, I had an ads expert for 2 years, and he was excellent. He crushed it for me, and he started his own business, and just, you know, he was killing it. And I knew he didn't have the time, and it wasn't worth his effort for me to pay him because he was bankrolling, which was okay. Had to find someone else, and it was the most painful. This year was probably the most painful year in terms of, because I had done this probably 4 years ago before I found him, was the vetting process is almost impossible to really know. And everyone, and this is why it's tough on our agency side, because everyone is selling you the dream. Oh yeah, you know, we'll 5x this, 10, and they get these case studies, and 99% of them just took a course or just had a training and have never even done it. And it's so frustrating. I almost dislike or hate the people that teach regular people how to run Facebook ads and then sell it to brands like us, and they've never done it. It's just like, oh my, don't bother. But so I actually have a process to full circle this, this whole year of me struggling. I now run all of our ads ourselves. I have clients that ask me to do ads. I won't do it. But anyone that, if you're like doing 1 million, 2 million, you know, and you want to try to bring on someone to run ads for you, what I would do, and this is what I do with anyone in any capacity, whether it's cold email, advertising, any skill that I think I want to bring on or try on the agency or e-commerce, I add them, I will hire them and pay them for a 1 hour screen share where we will set up campaigns together. And so I will not only will we get something set up, hopefully that works, but I'll be learning the process. Cause I'll tell you what, this year, when we split parts from my ad expert, who was great, know where to look in the ad account to find the ads. I didn't even tell you. So I was in an extreme bottleneck, like screwed situation where I was like, I don't even know what to do or what even questions to ask or find out. I knew some, but so I would recommend actually just doing a screen share with someone to not only hopefully learn for an hour so you know what's going on in the account, set up a campaign with them. So literally what I do, I say, what should we set up? You, this is what I'm trying to do. This is my brand. And then I'll tell them, okay, what button should I click? And they go, click create this or create ad. And I'll set it up. I'll struggle through it. And if that campaign does well, I invite them back for another hour call. And the whole goal is number one, to vet them. Number two, for me to learn. And number three, if they do a great job, you can just hire them. But at least you now have some knowledge and you're learning a little bit. And you're not blowing, you know, money on a arrangement with them or a retainer where they may not perform it as well at all. And I had this year, I did this with several so-called ad experts that I was very impressed with. And I was getting really good results in my own ad campaigns. I was like, you know what? I really don't want to do this forever. Let me find someone. I go, listen, let's set up with your best strategies and techniques. And who do you think won on those campaigns? Me or them?
Well, I figure if you're pretty good at firing people, you probably are pretty good at winning ad campaigns too.
Unfortunately, I wanted them to win. And instead of me being out a lot of time, setup fees, retainers, like all this money, I lost $100, $200 for the hour, $300 for whatever it is. And I learned their technique, although it didn't work. At least it's a much smaller vetting process. And you need to be confident when you're looking at these guys. That if no one's willing, if they're not willing to do that, number one, they're scared, they're not going to perform, or they don't know. And that's just how I'd roll with it. And that's how anyone that wants to work with us in any capacity, that's how we do it. We run them through an hour screen share where we're comfortable paying them and just learn from something and see if I'm still waiting. Anyone out there? I'm ready. Let's challenge me. I'd love to hire someone.
Yeah, that sounds like a really cool test project too. I'm a big fan of, you know, I feel like anything that we can split up into a small deliverable kind of test project, we want to, because you know, we'll just assume that somebody does great and they win, right? Not everybody that gets results is fun to work with. And you know, if you're going to have to work with this person on a regular basis, there's just been folks that we're not a good fit to work together. Maybe our personalities don't go well. And I don't want to hire somebody that I'm going to hate talking to, or I don't trust, or I'm going to avoid, because it's going to really hurt results one way or another.
That's a good point too.
Man, so with all of the ad setups, with the email, you know, what are you excited about in the next year? I know there's been a whole lot of fads that have come through. Some of them work great. You know, I've seen some people that have some good success with Facebook remarketing, but a lot of the chatbots, in my opinion, have just been way overhyped. And I could be wrong there, but just haven't seen as many success stories as we thought we'd see. What are you excited about in 2019?
I would agree with you on the messenger thing. It's just, I'm probably not the guy to ask because I'm so boring with this stuff because I only care about stuff that drives revenue and is an actual lever. Like I'm so blind to shiny ball syndrome and messenger and this and Reddit ads, Snapchat. I mean, we'll test stuff and I wouldn't say, I believe every business is different is worth testing, right? You know, you have a threshold of budget that you want to spend per month on testing. If you can do that, that's great. But really, end of day, it's traffic, email, and offer. If you just get those to be better, all three components, you don't need all these shiny balls and things that may add 1% of revenue or 0.1%. We've done the messenger campaigns, and yeah, the open rates are crazy, but people are not accustomed to going from messenger to purchase. Like, email is still like the biggest, not like is the biggest asset in my opinion, because messenger for me is so frustrating to talk specifically about that, because you don't really own that asset. You're really for terms, and you can't just send them all, you know, whenever you want with whatever message. Where email, we can control that dialogue so much more. And for me, you know, BombTech, it all comes down to like, what's the value in the brand? And the value in the brand is the email list. And our customer personally excited about is we have a lot of new product launches on the e-commerce side coming up. And I feel like we finally, after a couple of years, have nailed down the most efficient launch products. And so I'm kind of shifting my business model to be a little more limited edition and selling at a higher price point and then selling out and truly selling out. Because for me, what gets me excited is we sold 2,000 wedge sets and we're bringing those back in like 3 days. And then like a couple of weeks later, we sold out of 500 wedge sets in 6 hours. And, you know, I'm excited to do 200, 300, 400K in a day and be completely sold out of the product, email, and not being reliant on traffic as much. But really using that asset and driving just crazy, crazy revenue and profit. So for me, like, that's what's exciting to me after doing this for 6-7 years. It's like, it doesn't get me pumped up. Passion bank and freedom of time gets me excited. And the agency is a new thing for me. So like growing that and seeing the impact we've had with our clients is so exciting. Like when Chris first came to me, we started talking about this. And I was like, he wanted to do it on a side hustle. I said, go ahead, because I couldn't figure it out. And we knew the product, but we could perform. And the first three clients he had, he like 3x their email revenue in like 20 days. And I was just like, this is something I can get behind, because as an e-commerce owner, it's so frustrating dealing with so-called experts that don't move the needle. And I said, all right, we've got an offer that truly moves the needle. So our goal right now is just to find, we've got 10 clients, to find 5 more that are a good fit, that we can really impact their business and, you know, have relationships with long term. Like that's exciting to me. And I think the future of e-commerce is, you know, just doing the same stuff and in terms of traffic, email, but building relationships more on a deeper personal level. I think there's going to be even a bigger shift. And this is one thing we do in email, and I think we've done pretty well, is attaching a person to every brand. I think faceless brands already are losing, but I think 2019, if you do not have a person or face attached to any brand in any industry, you'll be done. So that's something, being a super authentic and putting yourself out there, because people buy from people. And I keep continuing on the e-commerce, e-commerce growers side and the e-commerce brand, putting myself out there, even though I've got outrageous memes about me, and I love it, bring it on. But it's, so I think it's gonna be more of a shift for social to be more social and people really winning, not big brands.
So I've always had some internal tension around, you know, putting a face on a brand, only from the idea of when you put a face on a brand, it also makes it so it's a little harder to sell the asset, right? Let's just imagine I start, I don't know, a razor company, and I say, okay, this is me, Lance Johnson. You're buying directly from me, more or less. Like, they know they're buying from a business, but I go to sell it. Or even if I went to buy a company, I put out there a couple of times, I'm looking for another e-commerce business to buy. And I would be hesitant as a buyer to go after a brand that has a face attached to it that isn't going to come with the business. So any thoughts on how to get around that kind of exposure?
I mean, we're the extreme example. I would say, like, from a middle road where you can still be, you know, not 100% personal brand. And I wouldn't say it's like everything we do is me talking to our consumer, because a lot of the ads we run, the ones that do well, don't have me involved, which I think is comical, which is good. But just even having a name attached, and this was like actually the third thing, name attached when you send emails. It doesn't have to be necessarily the founder. Just when you do an email blast campaign or automation, it comes from Sully, BombTech owner and founder. So it at least comes from a person. So like that would be the most basic thing, is to have some language in there, whether it's the HR manager, the founder, whoever it is, on email. Like, you know, we take it to the extreme because it works in terms of going Facebook Live in the groups. Done that, you know what I mean? And I would not personally, even if I was looking to exit, which I have contemplated, I wouldn't necessarily change what we've done and say, all right, I'm just going to, you know, take my face and my name off of things. I still believe in building that relationship regardless, because now I also have a lot of leverage because people know who I am. So when I transitioned into agency work, I already had a lot of credibility as a person. That's the one thing I would challenge you, is like, yeah, that is one of my brands, right? So now I can go and launch an agency. I could launch a SaaS business. I could launch different brands because people have seen, yeah, you know, we've got 60 million video views online. So that's the one thing I am doing to secure my future too, outside of the agency and e-com brand, is, you know, I have some, it's really weird to say, some celebrity online where people are like, oh yeah, I know who Sully is, maybe just in the golf space. But, you know, I would do that. It's almost like Gary Vee. Like, he blew up his agency because of his rep. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think in the golf space, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to be famous anyway. My stereotype with golfers is they're rich and would like be potential investors for anything you want to do. I don't know if that's an accurate stereotype with golfers, but it seems like net worth might be higher. So that makes sense. I think that there's a value to building a personal brand for sure, and then figuring out how you're going to transition with it. You know, if you're not just looking to exit and leave stage left, right? Like, I need to get my cash and never touch BombTech again, or you know, I need to sell my razor company and just be completely gone. That makes a whole lot of sense. I could see the way that could work.
Yeah, totally. And then, like, for me, I've always done things long term, and I just really focus on my time and effort on things that move the needle. So if me going Facebook Live and being the face of the brand is what moves the needle and drives revenue, I'm going to do that, you know, without even worrying about, like, all right, if I was to sell, that would impede the multiple. You know what I mean? So it's just like, that's my whole focus. And like right now, I am fortunate, you know, I've got two young kids, and I'm not grinding like I used to. When I first started on the other extreme, not to ramble on, I was working 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, because I was assembling the clubs myself, shipping them myself, doing the marketing, doing the content. I mean, I'm in such a different planet, but it took me so long to figure out what actually matters, even from like assembling the product. I was probably the epitome of what I'm talking about, doing the wrong things. You know what I mean? So trial by fire, but you know, it's a much more comfortable place when you've got low overhead, high revenue, and most importantly, high profit. And you don't have to rely always on traffic if your email's fine. You know what I mean? And then, like, our next couple launches, we're going to go pretty light on ads and try to sell it with just email. So that is like, email is still the most powerful thing, although it's probably the least. Everyone's like, oh, I know how to send email. You know, so it works at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it's well known, but often ignored. Or, you know, unoptimized, to say the least. So when you're looking at most businesses, you've really managed to build a pretty lean e-commerce business. But where do you see other businesses wasting money, right? Where are they kind of bloating up their overhead?
Well, I did a video on Facebook Live the other day on just shipping. Like, I know I talked about a little bit, but it took me a long time to get our products to a point where they now come fully barcoded, you know, plastic wrap ready to go, where a 3PL could take over. You know, we used to have a assembly plant down the road. They did a good job because we were doing all custom, right? So the first thing is look at your product offerings. And again, every brand is different. But I used to offer length, like loft, length, grip, and shaft type. So when you used to go to buy a driver from me, there were five. So I didn't even have the option of going to a 3PL because the product was so custom, fashion brand or apparel brand or anyone that has 900 SKUs, 200 SKUs, too many options because they think you need, or even sizes, 5XL, 3XL, just different examples of excess in terms of options. So when I pivoted, we brought that driver from five drop-down, hundreds of options and unscalable in terms of fulfillment to one drop-down with two options for our most complicated product. So what that means is not only do I'm, 80-20 rule, I'm selling the stuff that turns the quickest, but now I don't have inventory just sitting because I wanted more options and more things that I think the customer wants. And that was a really another hard thing because I thought my customer wanted custom and wanted all these options because that's what I thought. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what I think. Like that's also the underlying thing is let the audience dictate. You can't tell the customers what you want. So I think any business right now that just you're not selling your other SKUs, just kill them and try to run lean and get to a point where you can outsource it to a 3PL. Because our 3PL, when we moved to them, we moved four times. Again, I'm a slow learner, but we now are in Wisconsin, which has our quickest shipping time to our most popular locations. It costs us the least. And our cost to ship a product myself or even locally was $15 a club. Their cost is $7. And that's just shipping, not alone fulfillment. And they're experts at it. So just actual shipping, fulfillment, like ask yourself, do you need a monthly rent and warehouse and employees doing that? Whereas this is fulfillment's totally variable how we have it set up. If we sold, this is a super extreme example. We sold like only like 1,000 orders that month, right? Or let's say 200, whatever it was. We only get billed for that, right? But if we crush it, and let's say you sold 5,000 in a day, they can scale up and do that too. You're not the one scrambling to find people. And I don't think any one person that's not a 3PL do it better than a 3PL. So that's like on the most basic level. And then I see a lot of people with multiple like marketing managers and people just like making content and, doing the creative and stuff. It's like, I don't know if you need any of that. It's really just traffic, which is typically paid ads. And then it's email. And then it's customer happiness and just taking care of them. Other than that, I think everything can be made somewhere where you don't have to touch it and then ship where you don't have to touch it. And like, it does kind of drive me nuts when I talk to these other brands or see these brands. And I hope they can lean up, but it's totally how they want to roll. And that's cool if they want a ton of employees. But man, it's exciting to be doing seven, almost eight figures with like no overhead. It's kind of crazy. So shipping is a big one. Just that whole process can get really crazy quick.
I think sometimes there's like this badge of honor connected with how many employees you've got, right? I notice it, that it's happened just in my short career where sometimes I talk to, you'll just imagine a family member, right? And they're like, the ideas or the questions they want to ask are, how many employees do you have and what's your revenue? And the questions that matter are, how much money do you keep and, how sustainable is your business? But I think it can often get confused.
Yeah, it's one of those success metrics. That's why when people ask me what I do, I'm just like, I'm still figuring out. I just don't even go down that rabbit hole because then it's like blank stares and they don't even know what I'm saying. So after trying to explain it for years, I'm just like, yeah, I'm just, a dad and, selling some stuff online, whatever.
Yeah, that's probably a safe answer. So I think that, for kind of our last theme, that idea of trying to do limited runs, saying, hey, we're gonna have authentic scarcity. I love authentic scarcity. And I think that the markets just, probably all markets are way more sophisticated and see through false scarcity in a heartbeat. When you're sourcing, Are you sourcing new products that you already know are proven sellers, or are you doing some test runs before kind of scaling up and getting more units? Or how do you approach those new product launches you're talking about so you don't get loaded up on a product that nobody's going to want to buy?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of pre-orders. Our lead times are pretty long for manufacturing golf clubs and shipping them, because you cannot ship via air. We ship ocean everything. So we're not in like best case scenario for terms of lead time. But last year, this time, to be candid, we went massive on inventory. We had so many products and so much of them. It was actually a crazy time, a little scary, because we went so big because the speed that we were selling, I was like, we have to. You know, wiring insane amounts of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars at a time to get product made was scary. And, you know, so now, and we started doing this a couple of years ago, we do like, it's a couple step process. Number one, we will set up the exact product page we'll be selling off of, right? So we don't do a landing page. We do the exact product page with the price that we would sell off. And we just use a simple, it's like a sign up tool, an app. If you're out of stock, right? Nothing fancy. I try to make it not easy. Like, I don't want them, because we did this before where we had like a fancy landing page tied to a giveaway for a new product launch. And we had like 20,000 people sign up. Man, I should make like 50,000 units, right? And I found that those were like false signups. So now we use the actual product page with the price, with everything on there. And we just let people sign up. So like, we get 2,000 people signed up with some traffic and email like, hey, check out this product. Then we typically will, you know, we usually run that number of signups we get. We know probably 30% idea. And then typically when we start production and we're roughly 45 days out, we tend to do pre-orders. And again, it depends on the product, where we actually will take the money and say, okay, coming in, you know, I don't know, 45 days from now, if you want early access, early price, you can pre-order. And that is amazingly effective for cash flow and really knowing if that product's going to win. It's a sign-up thing. You never know until it's credit card out, cash in bank, you know, they paid. And we have messed up before. We had one product, which is almost sold out, beer pong. Holy grail, best product ever I made. It was beer pong plus golf. I was like, seller ever. It went viral when I posted it. And then I went to sell it. It didn't move. So now I'm down to the last 50 units. So that's why I can talk about it. But we got a ton of signups. So that's not always perfect. It's always when you take their money that you know. I always recommend, you know, go as small as you can handle, or as big as you can handle, rather, and do a pre-order. Get the cash as far out as you can comfortably, at least pay for some of that cash flow. And really, that's the big thing with e-com. Man, it's like, I didn't really realize this, but when I was doing like, even doing decent volume, I had to take out some working capital loans because I didn't really know how cash flow would really impact me. Because I'm like, oh, I'm doing 50K this month or 100K. I'm like, where's the freaking money? I was like, where's the money? It kept on spending on inventory and the lead time. So now it's, after doing it for years, you know, I like to run super lean, sell out, and sell at a higher profit. So overall, like, the revenue number doesn't really matter. It's the total cash in bank and cash flow that's going to allow you to invest more, live the life you may or may not want. That's what the metrics I look at is cash flow. And I'm always a big fan of pre-ordering as far out as you can to really bet that product and get the cash starting to come in.
Yeah, I totally agree that there's, you know, I like dry testing when possible, even if it's just like, hey, I'm going to run some traffic to a page that says, sorry, we're out of stock after they hit the add to cart button. But, you know, if at least I get people trying to add to cart, trying to initiate a checkout, then, you know, that's just a better indicator. Like, they were planning on buying, and, you know, maybe 1 in 3 or depending on the product price and everything, would have actually converted if the product had been in stock. If I'm not getting any add to carts at all, I probably don't want to move forward with this project.
Yeah, I've always talked about that in theory, but I've never executed on that. So that's, if you've done that, that's definitely an even safer option. You know, at this point, off brand, yeah, we're doing it long enough where we have like a lot of products that we've sold out And now it's just bringing them back. So it's a little safer, but a brand new proc, that's definitely a super safe way to think you're going to crush it.
Yeah. There's no guarantees until like they actually give you the money, but just trying to get as close to that conversion as possible.
Yeah, smart.
Well, Sully, it's been great having you on. If folks wanted to get in contact with you, either to buy some awesome golf clubs or to get some help with their email marketing, or I guess that's not the best way to say it, if they wanted help getting more revenue from existing resources, how would they do that?
Yeah, so my e-commerce website is bombtechgolf.com, and then the agency is just ecomgrowers.com. You guys can email me direct. I love talking and networking with other e-com owners. It's, you know, if I can give any value and vice versa, that's what it's all about. You can just email me at Sully, S-U-L-L-Y, at ecomgrowers.com, and I'll hit you back. I don't get too many emails in there compared to Bomb Tech, which I can't even look at. But yeah, I really appreciate the time. Hopefully provide some value and hopefully connect with some of the e-com.
Yeah, it's been great connecting. Thanks for coming on, Sully.
Anytime. Talk soon.
Thanks for listening. If you love the show, leave a review on iTunes. See you next time.